Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
When it's time to hire, I know that finding the right person for your company can be challenging. There's a lot of weirdos out there. And this is especially true when you're trying to hire for a small business where every employee truly impacts the organization. So when you're ready to find that next hire, my buddy LinkedIn can help. LinkedIn Jobs matches your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with 675 million members worldwide. You guys know what LinkedIn is. Do I have to tell you? This is the best way to get a job. This is the best way to find people to fill the role for your job. People who are the right kind of people. It shows you who's a friend of a friend or a friend of a friend of a friend. So you can get some sort of natural community background check in that way so that you know you're hiring the right person for the job. Now, you could pay what you want and get the first $50 off if you just visit linkedin.com/team right now. Again, that's linkedin.com/team to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
Christmas in April came in the form of the desperately awaited 2020 NFL Draft. After 2 days of tearing the wrapping paper off the boxes that hid unknown treasures, we sit on the floor, amidst the detritus of the gluttonous frenzy, wondering if Santa brought us what we wanted or what we needed. Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It's April 26, 2020. This is Tom coming to you from Sawdust Studios at the Washington, D.C. Outpost, and Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. I'm having postpartum blues. I got to be honest with you. It's not an indictment of the draft necessarily, just sort of like the anticipation, just especially among, you know, being locked down and having no news.
Well, yeah, we could start a negative because I'm with you that way in terms of it felt like there were actually sports this weekend. We were calling each other while things happened. We were linking P. Butch in. I made a horrible decision where my sister and I had decided to have a little double date Skype, whatever. You know, her boyfriend and her hold up in D.C. My girlfriend and I are holed up here in Houston. And we decided, yeah, we'll do it on Friday. I didn't realize what time she had wanted it for. Of course, it was during the second round of the draft. So I'm sitting there, phone open, just one eye on the phone, one eye on the Skype, and just waiting to see that Steelers draft pick come through. One eye on there. No regard for what a jerk I must have looked like at certain times. And to the point where we made the pick and I snuck into the bathroom to call you and P. Butch so that we could dissect Chase Claypool. But yeah, postpartum, if it was maybe one of the most fun drafts yet, just as a result of not having any other sports activity in the past, you know, number of weeks.
I will say though, my assessment is that we should have stifling special teams this year. I can't really get excited about anybody. I mean,
really?
We have a great first-round pick who played last season. And then, you know, everything written about these guys, everybody has positives and negatives. And Chase Claypool, there's one aspect about his game that excites me. We'll talk about that. But the rest of these guys, we'll go through it. I'll tell you what my sort of glass-half-empty view is.
Okay, I'm on the totally opposite side. I think that first things first, you only have how many picks? Two in the first top 100, if that?
One.
Yeah, one. I mean, this draft, in my opinion, you got first off, you got Minkah Fitzpatrick and Devin Bush because of the early third that you traded away. You got Chase Claypool, who not only is 100% going to get playing time this year, there's a chance he could push to be, you know, a big-time playmaker. We'll get into him later, but especially now that you've got him at the same time as getting Eric Ebron, you think about the idea of running Juju and Deontay on the outside with Ebron and Claypool on the inside, a la those Patriots teams with Hernandez and Gronk. There's some really exciting things that go on there. Highsmith in the second round at edge. We all knew that we were taking an edge. We all knew that that edge had a 0% chance of starting this year because Bud Dupree is going to be here. A little bit more on Bud signing his franchise tag, by the way, later. But I think that they got an edge who actually has some athletic upside, unlike the guys who have played there recently, unlike Chickalo. I do actually agree, but the fact that both those guys are special team studs actually makes me feel better after losing all of the best special teams players, Rosie Nix, Tyler Matakevich, Chickalo, and these guys have more offensive and defensive value potentially than a lot of those dudes. I like the selection of the running back that we got from Maryland, Anthony McFarland. We'll talk about whether we thought that was the right position to go with at that time. Maybe not. Maybe yes, maybe no. But either way, that I believe he's the fastest person on the offense now. So you have somebody who's got something that nobody else on the offense has. This is sort of what we were looking for in Kareth White last year. We made a lot of points about this is the only guy in the Steelers who could break a 50-yard run. You know, the rest of these guys aren't that type of player. So I'm excited about that. And then Dotson, the guard from Louisiana Lafayette, I really feel like we spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about being scared of the decline of this offensive line. The Steelers have always known that they have offensive line. They have an offensive line behind the offensive line for the past few years. And now I think that they're completely solidified. And not only, you know, do they have multiple guards to fill the spot, but they get more flexibility as well with somebody like Filer. So I'm pretty pumped on it. I feel good because at the end of the day, it's Minkah Fitzpatrick is the draft pick.
Yeah, I buy that. And I also acknowledge, you know, as you go down the ladder, you're going to have less talented guys. It's just that, man, these guys weren't even on the radar screen for me. I mean, did I see their names? No, I actually knew Claypool and then Alex Highsmith. He played at Charlotte, for crying out loud. And I think that's what you and I were, I know that's what you and I were talking about yesterday. No slam on him. I love when the Steelers pick somebody maybe out of nowhere, small school, and he turns out to be something, because I've always contended, and we have a little disagreement on this, guys are still developing during college. I know your view is that you see it freshman or sophomore year, it's not going to happen. And we don't know what this guy is not necessarily not capable simply because he played at Charlotte. It's just that I haven't seen him play against consistently good talent.
Right, everybody talks about the Clemson game that he played. Even Debo, I always want to call him freaking Debo Samuel. Debo Sweeney, the coach for Clemson, actually made a point of talking about Alex Highsmith before they actually played with him, and he showed up big time in that game. He looked great against that competition. I mean, if you watch that game that he played against Clemson, he's consistently the first out of, you know, the 10 linemen on the field off the ball. This guy explodes off the ball. But to your point, that's the only time we got to see him do it. So it remains to be seen. I don't know if you want to go down the list right now and go in order, but maybe let's just stick. You want to get to that? Let's wrap up the overall thoughts. Because it sounds like you hated the draft. I'm surprised.
I feel like I got a lot of presents at Christmas, and I didn't get that G.I. Joe with the parachute.
What did you want? What would have made you happy?
Well, Minkah Fitzpatrick makes me happy. And, you know, but he's a toy I got a year ago. So maybe I'm undervaluing it because he wasn't selected over the weekend. And I'll tell you, so if we can go down, can we just start with Chase Claypool?
Yeah, let's start with him.
The most exciting aspect of this whole thing is that Ebron and Claypool in the red zone. And I could just and Ben throwing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, two pieces. It seems like of odd,
it sounds like a free. It sounds like a free throw at that point to score a touchdown.
Sure, I think that's great. You know what? Actually, before we get to Claypool, because I think this brings up a good point. I think there are some Steelers fans out there who are angry because they watched the other three AFC North teams all have excellent drafts. I have two things to say about that. Number one, I'm not sure if anybody out there realizes how the draft works, but when you're a bad team, you pick much higher than the rest of the teams. And the way the draft works is you're guaranteed to get the best players in the draft. So, yeah, the Bengals and the Browns had good drafts, quote unquote, right? Can you believe that Joe Burrow slid to number one to the Bengals? Amazing. Yeah, the Ravens had a great draft. They always have a great draft. They draft well every year. They're the Ravens. But by the way, they had a first-round pick, and the Steelers didn't have a first-round pick. And so I think that people, you need to, when you look at the draft, you need to look at what were the Steelers trying to do with this draft? What were they trying to get out of this draft? The things that we talked about, it's clear that they need a little bit more help with the playmakers on offense. I don't know about you, but when the Steelers select a receiver within the first three rounds, I'm pretty excited because that guy's generally going to be a Pro Bowler, just sight unseen. The only one that didn't work out, you know, we're not going back to the Lima Swede days, but Marcus Wheaton, who I thought was actually a very good player, got derailed because of injuries. But generally, Steelers selecting one of these guys, this is really encouraging, especially one that has a skill set the other receivers don't have. Number two, we know that they needed to get edge reinforcement because we might be losing Bud and we don't have a backup edge. So now you got a guy who, yes, he played at a small school, but among the scouts, this was considered a slam dunk. I think everybody was happy with the Steelers getting Highsmith in the third round. If they had taken him in the second round or something, sure, I would have been pissed off. But this, like, I was much more angry at previous Steelers drafts. Clearly, we see that Terrell Edmunds is not even remotely a first-round pick. But if they had gotten Terrell Edmunds in the third round, I would have been thrilled. You know, it's about value. Where do you get these guys at? What do you need on your team? Now, to me, there wasn't just two more things here. The selection of Josh Dobbs, I thought was idiotic. Completely proven right. He's not even on the team anymore. Mason Rudolph, complete garbage. Yes, I know Mason Rudolph can get better, but they used a third-round pick that they could have used on an edge that year. So we wouldn't have had to, you know, use one of those picks at this time. And by the way, they said that they had a first-round grade on Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph had plenty of pieces around him last year and was not just bad, he was horrifically bad. Yes, I think he'll get better, but I'm just giving you examples of draft picks that we've taken that I thought were pointless or taken very far out of the range where they should have been taken. In this one, I think my biggest issue with this draft was we still don't have a starting nose tackle. The Steelers didn't address that until very late, like sixth round or seventh round or whatever it was, and then an undrafted guy. And then also the depth at safety, highly questionable, and they did not address that either. So those are my main problems. I don't have any problems with the players themselves who were picked.
I take a lot of comfort in the fact that the Steeler Brain Trust selected these guys. I mean, let's face it. They not only see the players they work with all year and where the gaps are and where the needs are, they do. They're guys who make a living on looking at high school and, you know, high school through college players. I don't know about high school, but college players. So
sometimes
they know this so much better than anybody could.
Right.
I don't think that the Steelers get cute too often, i.e. Dre Archer kind of picks.
Right.
So and the fact that they picked a nose tackle in the seventh round tells me, you know what? It's not a big position, not as big a position of need as you and I have thought, you know, edge rusher. And they can get by with what they have, and they can sort of plug that hole with sub packages, I guess, if all else, Danny McCullers and Tyson Alualu can't
right.
do the job.
Yeah, it's scary, but you're right. They're telling you at face value what they think of the position or what they thought of the value being there. But it is a little freaky because it's It's just, you know, they're only playing like 30% of the time in that base defense with a nose tackle, but you still need one. And who knows? McCullers has played better every single year, kind of shockingly.
But
are you upset based on the – because, by the way, I even go back, like, within these past few drafts, they took a freaking long snapper who didn't even make it through training camp. Like, there were some big issues with the past drafts that I had. Not at the top, but in the middle. I thought every player that they've drafted, particularly the first four guys, and even later with Antoine Brooks, the safety from Maryland, I think that you've got guys who are going to play and guys who were very good value for the round that they were selected in. So that and I... Yeah, nobody pointless or extraneous. You could say that about Anthony McFarland, the running back. Like, oh, we could have got by without a running back. But again, like, that's the fastest player in the offense now. So, on an offense that does not have much speed. So I like the idea of adding that there. But I guess we can go one by one if you want to start with Claypool. How did you feel?
Well, after I watched the analysis, and by the way, we have an updated chart on our website, SteelersOutpost.com. with a link to Chris Sims' analysis of Claypool. I felt a lot better about seeing the breakdown of Claypool's game.
24 minutes long.
Sort of one of the beasts about him is he has this apparent lack of speed. He's at least at the combine, he's a 4.4, he's a 4.4 guy. Mm-hmm. So he is really fast. He catches with his hands. I mean, whether or not he can separate, that's a big question about him.
Yeah.
He almost doesn't need to. You know, he's 6'4". He's a former high-level basketball player. I think he comes out of Canada, British Columbia, averaging like 50 points a game on his high school team. I mean, so the guy, I like that, the fact that he comes from that sport. He can get up in the air. He's really physical. And you can stay hip-to-hip with him, but it won't matter when the ball goes up in the air.
Well, when you have someone like Ben who can throw those type of balls as well. I have a problem with my headphones here, and then we're back. I wanted a receiver that was a deep threat. That was really my thing. I really wanted a speed guy because I feel like they have decent speed with Deontay Johnson and Juju, but nobody who's really a burner. You have a bunch of sort of technicians. You have James Washington, as we've always said, the deep threat who's not fast. And, like, hey, he showed last year, he finds a way to bring the ball down even when he's downfield. But I just like the idea of the Steelers having a receiver at all times who can burn people, because I've seen how successful those guys are with Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball. And I know how much that opens up for all those great intermediate weapons that we have. Like, so many of these players make a living underneath with Juju, Deontay, even Vance, Ebron down the seam, Connor catching the ball out of the backfield, which he does very well. So I wanted a guy who could burn deep. Another Mike Wallace, Martavis Bryant, like Sammy Coates to an extent. There have been other guys who have filled that role. That being said, I really like the Chase Claypool selection. Once I got over the fact that we didn't get a burner, it's like, look, number one, first and foremost, I'm going to take the approach that the rest of the national media has taken, where it's like, oh, Steelers took a receiver in the top three rounds. Hello, Pro Bowl. Because honestly, that's how they do it. And here's the thing. He's a senior, but he is a little bit of an exception to the rule. He is still on the upswing. So the famous thing everybody's hearing about him is, like you said, he ran a 4.4 at the combine. The guy's 6'4", 400 pounds of muscle. And the only other person to be 6'4 or above and run a 4.4 in the combine, only other person ever do it in history, Calvin Johnson, Megatron. Now, they don't even really have similar games. In my opinion, Calvin Johnson's basically, you know, God's gift to receivers. He's untouchable. So let's not get them in comparisons. But that does tell you what type of athlete this guy is. And I like what you said about the fact he catches with his hands and he goes up and he bodies people and he'll bring it down. And the fact that he played basketball, usually those are cute little anecdotes. Like, this guy played baseball in college, so he has this and that. Well, I think it's different when you're talking about big-bodied pass catchers in the NFL. Because he reminds me and a lot of other people actually more of some of those move tight ends, like Evan Engram, who played at Ole Miss and now he's on the Giants. But Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez were great basketball players. Jimmy Graham, another great basketball player. I mean, you know, he scored a couple points a game in college, but he still played college basketball. It's pretty great, right? So those things all match up. And while I personally value like separation, explosivity, and route running a little bit more than I value a big guy who can go up and catch it, there are few guys that really have this type of athletic profile that Chase Claypool has. And while maybe he doesn't look 4-4 speed on the field like as much as you might think, from if you watch that video with Chris Sims and Paul Burmeister, both former college quarterbacks, so they have an idea of the speed of these type of guys. They cover Notre Dame. They cover all the Notre Dame home games for CBS. So they've gotten to see this guy play, and they said, you know what? His junior year, he didn't really look like he played at that 4-4 speed. But towards the end of that year, it started to look different. And then by the time he got into his senior year, they said it really did look like he took advantage of that 4-4 speed. And I agree. I know I'm long-winded here, but you and I agree this could be really exciting and creative. It just depends on if Fietner can take advantage of it. But if you have him and Ebron running seams down the middle of the field, because by the way, he plays in the slot or outside, Claypool, and then Juju and Deontay on the outsides or Washington stepping in there, that's a really stressful situation to put the defense in. So I really like the pick. Oh, by the way, he's also a special teams stud. You can play Gunner and do other stuff like that.
What's the biggest Gunner tape in history?
what's that tape with Sims? Because what was really impressive is the way Claypool can track the ball and he can toward his body in midair. He's a sideline toe tapper from what we said. So he has great body control. Just a couple other stats about him. He broke 1,000 yards last year, 66 receptions and 13 receiving touchdowns. He is tied for 7th on the Notre Dame all-time touchdown receiving list. So great pedigree. I think we can both agree we're very excited to see this. I wonder, and some people have mentioned that he might not convert to tight end, but he can be employed as a tight end.
Well, I think that it goes back to what I was saying about him getting compared to these move tight ends like Evan Engram or even Jimmy Graham. Like, those guys are tight ends, but they barely block. And even actually Eric Ebron, like we talked about last week on the show, he talked to Tomlin and he said in so many words, like, you're not going to block. You're going to catch touchdowns, but you might have to chip somebody once in a while. And that's what you can do with this guy. So that's really interesting. Can you be forward thinking enough with the offense? Do we trust Fietner to do that? Of course we don't, but maybe between him, Ben, and Matt Canada, everybody's favorite.
Because this guy's from Canada.
There you go. We got the Canadians and the Maryland guys.
And we
guys
got
here.
Two guys from Maryland, yeah.
Yeah, Canada, maybe everybody was downplaying. Maybe this guy's the heir apparent to Mike. But either way, I totally agree with you. You can sort of play him like a tight end. By the way, he's a great blocking wide receiver. Juju's a great blocking wide receiver. This is going to improve the run game. And unless you really pay attention to stuff like that, you're never going to be able to tell on TV. But it's going to improve the run game, especially with guys like Connor and like McFarlane, who can break long runs. That's generally what they say the secret to long runs is, by the way, besides, you know, getting past that first level. If you have receivers who can block at the second level, that's what's going to get you those big explosive plays. But one last thing I wanted to say. And by the way, we're spending a lot of time on Chase Claypool. He's the top pick besides the greatest free safety in the NFL, Minka Fitzpatrick. But the other thing about Chase Claypool is the other one he reminds me of is Vincent Jackson, who is one of the only other like big receivers who I've seen who basically plays on the boundary. He's not like Calvin Johnson or Brandon Marshall, who are sort of just absolute super freaks and they could kind of get horizontal a little bit better than some of these guys. But like Vincent Jackson and this guy, Chase Claypool, would makes them a little bit different is it's not just run straight, jump, and catch the ball. They do have nuance to their routes. And when you watch Claypool in the red zone, and they do a great job on the breakdown that Sims did. And by the way, they break down a lot of the games that I watched. Whenever I try and watch these guys on YouTube, you can just type in the player's name. So like Chase Claypool, and then verse, like VS, and then YouTube will auto fill out the opponents that they have film of. So like, oh, Chase Claypool versus Georgia, Claypool versus whatever. I always try and go down the list and obviously watch the best opponents first. And so they have a lot of clips from those games. But Claypool has nuance to his routes where he knows how to set guys up inside before taking one hard cut and going outside or whatever it is. And I think the ability to tiptoe along the sidelines, use your hands along with your body, that is such a basketball player type of thing. Will he get caught up against some great cornerbacks who might be able to jam him initially? Sure, yeah. You can't be good at everything, right? But I think it's an exciting pick. And he doesn't have to come in there and be the man because we feel good about the three guys ahead of him and the two tight ends.
Did you coin explosivity, or is that – that sounds like a NFL Network or ESPN term.
That is a
– Mel Kiper?
No, way better, way better. And I'm, of course, I'm just blanking. I'm looking at him in my mind, the punter, Pat McAfee. That's a Pat McAfee. So there's a comedian, Bert Kreischer, hilarious fat man who parties a lot, and they call him the Machine. And he has a competitive streak in him where he's got this weird thing about him where he says he has a Mickey Mantle gene. So despite him drinking and partying a lot, he can wake up and do great physical feats of athleticism. And he's actually not wrong. He's kind of got some – it's not the Mickey Mantle gene. It's the Jerome Bettis gene because this guy actually didn't train for a marathon and ran it in a decent time. I think it was like under – I don't want to say what the time is because I forget. But anyway, so this guy tried to – he was on a show with Pat McAfee, who's a very funny commentator as well. And he in his cocky way, Bert Kreischer says, like, I bet you I could be an NFL kicker if I just trained for a couple months. And McAfee says, no. No, you can't. You know what the difference between you and I is? Bert says, what's the difference? McAfee says, explosivity. And Bert always tells these stories on podcasts, and that's the cadence they always tell it with. He goes, you know what the difference is? Explosivity. And it's, but he's right. That's the difference. I mean, Pat McAfee was known also for laying people out. I mean, he would crush people on kick returns and stuff like that because even the punters are great athletes. But that's the difference. Yeah, he's not a big plotter, Chase Claypool. He does have some explosivity.
Do you know what? That's funny because depending on where you went to high school, the best player on your high school football team can barely make it in a Division III team as a punter.
Oh, yeah.
That's how much talent's out there. Hey, can we move on?
Let's do it.
I know we spent about a half hour on him. We need to ratchet it back a little bit. But
that's all right.
I wanted to say that I'm really excited for Alex Highsmith. There's nothing I'd love better than have a guy who came from Charlotte, a crappy Division VIII team, who went 7-6 last year, playing the likes of Gardner Webb. Appalachian State's generally good, and they ended up losing to Appalachian State. But, you know, Florida Atlantic, Western Kentucky.
They're not bad. The Mustangs?
Well, they lost to them. I'll just say, here's who they beat. They beat Gardner Webb. And they, by the way, when they win or lose, somebody scores 50 points on one end of these games. And sometimes they both score 50 points. Lowest scoring game for them was Western Kentucky when they only scored 14 points. But North Texas State, does that ring a bell with you?
Mean Joe Green.
Right.
When they name their football team after you when you leave, you know you did a good job. So Miami of Ohio is seriously slacking unless they change their name to the Big Bens.
So Alex Highsmith, chosen in the third round, the 102nd pick. He's a compensatory pick for Martavis when Martavis went to Oakland. 6'4", 240 pounds. He ran a 4.7 40-yard dash at the combine.
So Alex Highsmith... The reason why I like him, explosivity. He's the anti-Chickalo. He might not be as girthy, but this guy actually has some bend, which we've talked about the Steelers' edges for the past few years. But the one big problem that a lot of these guys have outside of TJ Watt is none of them really have that bend. So they have a ceiling on how good you can actually be that way, because that's kind of the critical ingredient to be able to get around a tackle fast, get down to the ground so it makes you hard to block, and have the strength to be able to ward them away. Obviously, James Harrison, who's already halfway to the ground, you know, with his short, compact frame. But if you remember watching James Harrison, that's what every pass rush was. It was just that outside rip was unstoppable that way. Well, Alex Highsmith has that. He is a blur off the ball. He has a great fast first step. And if you guys want to watch this yourself, like I said, just go type in Alex Highsmith verse and then whoever. Just pick whatever game you want to watch. I mean, it's even apparent against Clemson that when they hike the ball and you watch all the linemen, who's the first guy that's going to come off the ball? And Alex Highsmith's going to win that battle a lot of the time.
I just want to keep pumping our website because I have spent renewed energy on it. And I do have a really some clips of him. They did some not just highlight clips. There's actually a nice analysis of him during multiple games, Tennessee and Clemson.
Yeah, so he has a little bit more of a pass rusher upside than, you know, Chicolo did, who never had that. I mean, he was like a defensive lineman in college. He was supposed to be an edge rusher, but then when he got to Miami, they changed him into a defensive lineman, and the Steelers changed him back to an edge rusher. So he just never really had much to work with there. I think the fears about Highsmith, we'll talk about the small college thing, of course. That's always a fear. I want to get back into that because I think your concern is shared by a ton of people who follow the team. But some people do think that he is athletically maybe maxed out a little bit. Like, it's going to be hard for him to pack on more poundage to that frame. And at 242, 6'4", 242 pounds, like, is he going to be able to hold up against NFL tackles? Or is he going to get hit with that Bud Dupree early career, I'm going to try and rush around the edge and just get pushed 20 yards behind the quarterback thing? But we will see. Either way, phenomenal special teams value, but already probably an upgrade at third pass rusher from what you had in Chicolo last year. So that's why I like the pick. He gets a chance to be groomed. We'll see what happens to him. Even if he doesn't succeed Bud Dupree, he could still stay as that third edge position and be a great special teamer, which you need. But I'm curious because he also, like TJ Watt, like we said with him when he was coming in the NFL, he's surprisingly nuanced with his pass rush moves and his plan. If you watch some of those breakdowns, you'll see him do spin move, rip move, dip around the end, and he's got the ferocious motor, that same thing where he'll run for 20 yards to catch a quarterback. So those are all encouraging things. I like the pick. I like the pick where they took him to, at the end of the third round in the compensatory area. It was really a position of need. We talked about that position, safety, and defensive tackle. This one's probably out of all of those, you know, the most critical. So I'm glad they used that pick. My question for you is, are you just worried about this guy because you think that it's a risk drafting a guy from such a small school that way? It's like a boom or bust project prospect rather than drafting somebody from Clemson. It's like, oh, maybe he won't be a star, but at least I know he competes against NFL quality people.
Exactly. And you, what are sort of the features we want to see? We want to see somebody who's a power five. His dad, his uncle, and his grandfather all were starting at least punters in the NFL before him. You know, that's sort of the checklist of things you look for that sort of make it easy to say yes. So you just don't have enough game tape of him competing against high-level competition, period.
What's the name of it? Gardner Webb?
Gardner Webb.
Yeah, not a lot of footage on them. Hey, but the Steelers have had success with it before. I mean, Ben, Miami of Ohio, although that's I can't count that. He was obviously world famous as going to be a top 10 pick. But the last great one, Javon Hargrave, South Carolina State. Now, surely a few more guys come out of South Carolina State. I think Darius Leonard, the middle linebacker for the Colts, went there, rookie of the year a couple years ago. But, yeah, I don't know how many more have come out of Charlotte. By the way, he walked on at Charlotte. I think almost got the NCAA award or did get the NCAA award for like a walk-on player, which is kind of shocking because with the walk-on guys, you would think that they're like the more unathletic dudes. And this guy has some athletic power. But that does speak to your point, too, of like, hey, sometimes these guys develop a little bit later. But I think that that applies more towards like the 17, 18, 19, 20 range. But yeah, I'm happy with that pick with Alex Highsmith. I'll be really curious to see what he can do in camp, and we knew that was one of the main positions that they needed to draft. So I think we, you know, first two picks went to wide receiver, get Ben some extra help on offense, and to one of the positions on defense that desperately needed some depth, and hopefully he can give TJ and Bud some breathers in some passing situations.
Which brings us to our first of two Terps, fourth round, 124th pick. The Steelers choose Anthony McFarland, running back out of Maryland, a redshirt sophomore. He had a 4.44 in the 40 during the combine, and he is third in Maryland history with an average rush of 6.7 per carry. He had some crazy outlying games, though. It's hard to assess this guy. I mean, he's very fast. It's great game tape. But he has, I'm just looking at the games right now. I mean, he had some crazy breakout games that lent itself to that average.
Right.
He only had 600 yards rushing this past season. So he was hampered by a crappy team.
Frankly. Maryland always confuses me. It's so sad because, you know, we're a stone's throw away from Maryland, or at least I was if I was at home with you right now. Yeah. But, damn, they had some decent teams while I was growing up, but I don't even know if they can ever stay with the same quarterback for three games.
Because they get annihilated. All their quarterbacks in sequence are injured throughout the season. They can go through five quarterbacks in a season. They just can't keep them up.
Yeah, and even with, like, remember when Sean Davis was playing there? They can't decide if he's a corner or a safety. It just seems like there's always so much turmoil over there. Like, you're pointing to those big games that inflated his number. The guy had 298 yards against Ohio State. That's insane. Either way, I'll say this. I love the pickup. I'm very excited about him. But I don't like the fact that they took a running back at this point. This is the fourth round. This is one of two fourth-round picks the Steelers had. Anthony McFarland, scat back, jitterbug running back from Maryland. By the way, I know everybody on the Steelers Twitter is saying, oh, Dre Archer, Chris Rainey. This guy is like 20, 30 pounds heavier than both of those guys. So not all scat backs are created the same, right? So let's get that out of the way. But they took Anthony McFarland at running back, which is a position that the Steelers, we've agreed, that room could use bolstering, but it may not be as desperate as the fact that we have no backup free safety and the fact that there's no starting nose tackle. And by the way, guard, they picked that later. We'll talk about Kevin Dotson next. I love that they picked up that position because you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. The Steelers were lucky to have such a great defense and a quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger who could play without an offensive line during those Super Bowl runs. But we saw what that did. And we saw, like, oh, by the way, you only have to have one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game and one of the best defenses of the era, and that's how you can succeed in those times without an offensive line. So I like the fact that they're not ignoring this sort of changing of the guard, and they're sort of preparing for what happens next with you know, the rest of the linemen. But the fact that, getting back to Anthony McFarland, I love that they picked him. I feel like it should have been a safety or a nose tackle. I really love that they picked this type of running back because the Steelers don't have any player like this on the offense right now. They have no explosive 4-4 guys. I mean, maybe Deontay ran a 4-4 that way, and I do think he's pretty explosive. He obviously has a lot of similarities to AB and to Sanders, but you need at least another guy that way, and definitely one out of the backfield, and that's what McFarland is. My only question is, the Steelers have never used a back like this. So the two guys that come to my mind, like, for your ideal scat back type dude, well, there's three or four. There's, like, you know, James White in New England, Duke Johnson, he used to play for Cleveland, you know, Corey Clement, who won the Super Bowl with the Eagles, and these dudes who will come in on third down or be a change of pace back, and they'll catch a lot of passes. I haven't seen the Steelers use a guy like that. They failed miserably with the gadgety guys that we talked about, Dre Archer and so on, but this guy isn't really a gadgety guy, and so I'm not saying that they don't know how to use these running backs. I'm just saying I am a little worried with Fietner being the guy to figure out how that's done because I just haven't seen the Steelers do it before. Rather than if you talk about if the Steelers get a deep threat, I'm like, oh, I've seen this four or five different times.
The other thing that I don't like about the pick is he hasn't played special teams. So he seems to be, you know, can he? I have no idea. But is he going to be a one-trick pony? And if the Steelers can't figure it out how to use him, or he's just not successful at the next level, was he a waste of
time? He didn't return kicks at Maryland? That seems like such a perfect guy to be returning kicks.
Yeah, like two.
I wonder if they'll try him there. I mean, I would. Although that's an art that you don't want to mess around with too much. But if you're an athlete, you can catch a damn ball.
He had one kickoff return for 40 yards. Okay.
What the hell?
So that's pretty good.
Maryland just baffles me. That was great.
No. He ran too far. He just gassed everybody.
They gassed the rest of the team. I told you to get him out of there. Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, that's a great point. The special teams value is there. So it's funny because I actually love the player. I'm very excited that they got the guy. But the value and the fact that they picked him when he did, I don't know about that.
Moving on to the other fourth round pick at number 135, the Steelers select Kevin Dotson, the aforementioned guard from Louisiana Lafayette. He's a redshirt senior, 6'4", 321. He was one of the five highest graded offensive linemen in the nation, which tells you how much the coaches or the general managers, what kind of stock they put in those ratings. This guy was chosen 134, but he was first team All-American Associated Press, first team All-American USA Today, and Sports Illustrated. Curiously, he was the first non-combine player selected in the 2020 draft.
And I believe the Steelers tried to get him in the combine. They voted for him to go to the combine. I saw something on that earlier today. Okay, so here's the thing. This guy, great personality, really funny on Twitter already. Ramon Foster has already reached out to him about wearing number 73. It could be because Dotson said actually that Foster is one of the guys in the NFL that he watched a lot of. He's been called like a mauler, but he had an issue with that, saying that I sort of think that that insinuates I don't have this technique, but I'm a very technique-filled player, which is true. And it's funny because a lot of people say, oh, he's a Steelers lineman. He's a big mauler. And I'm like, I don't know what you've been watching, but the Steelers line has really been led by, you know, DeCastro and Pouncey, who are athletic, pulling smaller guys. And obviously you have Foster and Villanueva on the left side, but I think that that's a little bit of a misconception. Either way, is this guy going to be the favorite of the Steelers fans? Because he's a massive Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and he took a picture of him and all of the Steelers paraphernalia after he got drafted by the Steelers. Or are they going to love Chase Claypool because he's a great hard-nosed blocking wide receiver? Or are they going to love Alex Highsmith because he's going to be the next edge that they're going to talk themselves into being James Harrison? Oh, you can let Bud go. You have Ola and Highsmith. I mean, they're not going to love the running back because he's not, you know, he's not a bruiser. But either way, this guy is Steeler written all over him, from the personality to the actual play style.
And he checks one of the boxes. He is a progeny of his uncles who both played in the NFL, Cleveland and Arizona.
There you go. Now, here's a question for another day. But he did play for possibly my favorite college team name, the Ragin' Cajuns. Louisiana Lafayette, the Ragin' Cajuns to the Steelers. You can't get any more perfect in terms of a progression that way. I feel good about that.
Is it
that.
Offensive to the mixed heritage Creole people of Louisiana?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Be careful. I'll have to cut this out.
Cajuns on the team. Yeah.
Get off that ice. All right, but that'll be a fun thing to do. Maybe we could do that this week. You could tweet that out and we can get some responses. Favorite college team names?
Yeah.
You know what their name is?
Like the Eagles or something?
I think it's The Rock.
It is The Rock, right?
The least creative name. We could do
no,
least
that's
creative
awesome.
Name.
I'd be pissed if they changed it. Like, you already have enough in the title of your school. Like, how disappointing would it be if they were called, like, the Slippery Rock Golden Frogs? Like, just call it The Rock, baby. That's awesome.
Of course. Your high school, still not even sure. You have a bulldog. We never even refer to the bulldog as the actual
right.
symbol, but your
Hoya,
mascot is the
little Hoya.
Hoya Saxa.
That's right.
The Rock.
What rocks, it means.
What rocks.
Right. A Georgetown student said that back in the 1700s.
Antoine Brooks is the second Maryland Terp selected in the sixth round at 198. He was a senior, 5'11", 215. It's called a safety, but
kind of a box guy, yeah.
Yeah, he is a flexible guy, something that the Tomlin noted he likes in him.
So I had actually just tweeted at Alex Kozora earlier today. I asked Alex, you know, great Steelers, I don't know if you call him a beat writer or whatever, but Steelers, I don't know. The guy knows the Steelers.
Guy.
Either way, you guys know Alex, right? And I said, like, hey, doesn't this kind of remind you of the Marcus Allen selection? Because it's sort of another safety. It's like, well, he's a safety, but he doesn't make any interceptions. So we're going to play him at dimebacker. And I feel like every year we add a new guy. It's like, this could be a dimebacker. And then the guy's off the team in a year. Well, the difference is Antoine Brooks actually has a couple clips of him making some gorgeous interceptions, but he's not going to make any for the Steelers at this level. That's not really his strength. And there's even talk about maybe converting him to a linebacker at a certain point, which is sort of interesting. So, yeah, he does interest me as a dimebacker, not to be redundant that way. It's just funny seeing the Steelers take all these Maryland guys. You know, they think that you'd think that Sean Davis would have scared them off. But I guess Chad Scott did all right back in the day. But, yeah, Tomlin's son, I guess, goes to Maryland. And Matt Canada, obviously, was the coordinator at Maryland. So it is funny. Like, football guys, they like their guys. And maybe there's a rhyme and reason to that, too. You know, when you talk about McFarland, it's like, is he the best jitterbug runner in the nation? Like, I mean, no, he would have gotten drafted earlier. But, like, how much better is the guy who gets drafted in the third round than him when Matt Canada says, like, this guy's good enough to do what I want him to do? Kind of like what Kyle Shanahan does in San Francisco. It's like, oh, I don't need the best running back, but I need the running back who – I need one who fits this, you know, set of skills, and I know how to use him because I know exactly what the guy can do and can't do. That's why I let him return one kick for 40 yards and took him off the field. But
what I found interesting was that he was Maryland's most valuable player this past year, and he led the Big Ten in the country – or the Big Ten with an average – with his six tackles per game, but it was only the second team all Big Ten. It's kind of a mixed bag. Maybe he was prolific because Maryland was on its back so much and on defense.
Well, I assume the entire first team is just Ohio State's starting offense and defense for the Big Ten stuff. But, hey, another interesting thing, actually, now that we're talking about these Maryland guys, is there was some rumor by a non-blue checked marked rando from Baltimore who's a Ravens fan. I don't know how this got taken so like seriously by people, but he said, I live in Baltimore. I got an in with University of Maryland. Steelers select another problem character in running back Anthony McFarland from Maryland. And he told some story about how the coaches wanted him to declare and or he wasn't going to touch the ball. And he cussed them out and tried to like point at us. The Steelers take, oh, yet another, poor character guy coming from the team that has literally two murderers on their team in the past 20 years. But either way, I think that that's a crazy, unfounded story. A lot of people came out and talked against it. And then I don't remember the guy's name, but there is a practice squad lineman for the Steelers who they got from last year who went to Maryland, and he was hyped about getting McFarland. And McFarland had all kinds of Maryland teammates tweeting him that they were pumped, and they had, you know, these two guys are pumped to play together. So that really shows you how wrong that report is. He's clearly very well-liked, and then Matt Canada says that he loved him, so...
Derwin Gray. I think he was our seventh round pick.
Oh, Derwin Gray. Right. Yeah. So just in case anybody is wondering about those reports, it's unfounded.
Check the check mark. That's what the blue check is about. So the Steelers round out their choices in the seventh round at number 232 with Carlos Davis, defensive tackle from Nebraska, redshirt senior, 6'2", 313. He was also, in addition to his football prowess, an All-American track and field discus thrower. Player.
That's pretty cool, but I need you at least 380 or above if you're playing nose tackle for the Steelers. I guess they did. It sort of reminds me of when they took Isaiah Buggs last year. You know, really late prospect there. I do think that they signed another guy from either Ole Miss or something like that, right? Another defensive tackle. Yeah. So they didn't prioritize the nose tackle thing early, but they did bring a couple guys in late. And obviously we saw the safety was brought in late, but that still doesn't – Antoine Brooks doesn't address my concern. We have some backup, you know, hard-hitting safeties. We have Marcus Allen already, but we don't have anybody you can play in the back end still. So I have no idea what they're going to do unless there's someone still floating around out there. But, yeah, Carlos Davis, seventh-round pick. You're going to try and get that defensive tackle, nose tackle room. Try and get something together and scrounge it between Big Dan and – Bugs and Davis and the other guy they brought in. So we'll see. It's a seventh round pick, though. What are you going to say?
I was going to ask you to slap a grade on here, but I actually think it would be foolish. It's just, what do you know?
Right. Yeah. We have no idea. I'll say this. I was satisfied at the players they picked. There was nobody who was a total gadget, total out of left field guy. I think every player fits a need. You get a wide receiver, a big play wide receiver. You know, we needed that. You get an explosive running back and needed another explosive player on offense. Thanks for helping Ben that way. You know you needed an edge player. You got a good guy there. Consensus, the whole scouting community has Alex Highsmith as a good value pick for where the Steelers got him. Does that mean he's going to be great? We have no idea, but at least it wasn't a crazy Artie Burns reach or Terrell Edmonds that way. And then guard, you and I agree. We think that we had said this since probably midseason that we had our eye on the Steelers' offensive line. Like, hey, you can't just be worried about the starters. You have to make sure this depth doesn't go up, and you need to have options to move guys around from tackle and guard. So you got that. You got a safety, Antoine Brooks. Again, I really wish it was somebody who played in the back end a little bit more. And then you got a defensive tackle. You know, you needed that. So there were no pointless quarterbacks drafted. There's no long snappers, no 5'4" guys, nothing like that. That feels good. And I feel like all these players were productive players. And only time will tell at this point.
So we have multiple easy ways to get to us. I'd love to hear from the Outpost family whether you're happy with this, you're not happy, you're neutral. So at the end of the show, you know, we list our various channels, so we'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk about it next week. The only other bit of news, and there's some other things we'll do next week, is, as Nick mentioned earlier, Bud Dupree did sign his franchise tender. He's slated to make $16 million. If he somehow finagles his way to be labeled a defensive end, he could be set for $18 million. Anyway, good news, and I know they're still trying to negotiate a contract with him.
Right.
And I really hope they get that done, because it just seems if Bud can maintain, you've got an insurmountable defensive front.
Hey, and think, I mean, the Steelers have three Heisman Trophy quarterbacks in their division now. I mean, I'm not thrilled about this Joe Burrow development, but if you have Lamar Jackson in your division, you really have to be able to seal those edges off. So I do think the Steelers will make a hard push to try and retain these guys that have another Harrison Woodley type of situation. But fingers crossed, we'll see. At least they know that they'll have him for one more year.
So we have a lot more to talk about going forward. We'd like to hit off of what you guys think. So visit our website at SteelersOutpost.com. I have a lot of information, an easy-to-read chart on there with links so you can check out some of the game film more easily and links to the combine numbers. Check us out on Instagram at Steelers Outpost. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Or just shoot us an email, you know, old-fashioned email, SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next week, go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.